What is going on, everybody? Welcome back or welcome to the United States of Soccer. This is the number one soccer podcast that covers everything from the Premier League, the Major League Soccer, and the United Soccer League. My name is Michael Willis. I am not joined by Brian Mitchell, nor am I joined by producer Alex. I am here to bring in episode 3 of our Beyond the Pitch series. And you might be wondering, why are you not joined and flanked by the normal two guys that are doing this show with me? That's because we forgot. That's because we forgot to record the intro when we were all together. So here we are. Today we have an awesome guest for you. If you guys remember, we had a good talk with Andrew Wells, a former West Ham Academy player. We then had an awesome conversation with Eddie Lewis of Toka Football. And today, on episode 3 of Beyond the Pitch, we have UVA men's soccer legend, former Columbus Crew and LA Galaxy player. He was an NBC studio analyst when the Premier League was simply known as Barclays. He is the main man behind Golfer, Street FC, Football Cafe, and the Over Under Project. Everybody welcome Kyle Martino.
All right, we're here with Kyle Martino. Man, how you doing today? How's your Monday going?
Oh, it's Monday?
Today is Monday.
Yeah, it's going good. It's going good. Sunny day in downtown New York City.
Nice. That's awesome.
Is that where you're from? I should have looked this up beforehand.
No, I traveled around a lot when I was younger, but then grew up mostly on the tough streets of Westport, Connecticut.
Tough streets of Westport, Connecticut. Oh, Connecticut. Love that. Absolutely love that.
That's awesome, man. Well, thanks so much for coming on and agreeing for this. We appreciate it, man. We'll jump right in, and we just kind of want to get to know you more and have our listeners get to know you more as well. So I'll kind of start back at the beginning. I know in an Instagram post, a social media post recently, you kind of talked about it very briefly, but I would love for, you know, mainly our listeners to kind of start from the beginning about how and when did you fall in love with the game?
Ooh. I can remember it very well. I was grew up in a house that was, it was like a Hunger Game. So a lot of siblings, not a lot of food, and running around, you know, beating each other up. And just trying to survive, and volunteering tribute every other weekend. We would go to church on Sundays, and there was only one TV, and you know, you really had to battle to get TV time. And I figured out I would never get it like during the week. I was the youngest boy of four, and I had a little sister, so I was just like, oh. So I figured out if I just got dressed for church super quick, because everyone, you know, all the kids always wake up late and get dressed late, and you're like going out. But I figured out if I just shave some time off of my dressing, I could go sit and catch a little bit of TV before we went to church on Sundays, and just one. And I'm doing this, like, that is how old I am.
It was the dial. The crank, yeah.
Crank. And one Sunday, just all of a sudden, something I'd never seen before. I just incredibly magical, balletic, you know, dance that was in a different language. And, you know, come to find out many years later, like, Donadoni is not an Italian word. That was a pretty good player. I fell in love with the game, just finding it on, you know, Rye one Sunday morning accidentally.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, that makes sense. I know I was born in 90, so I'm 33 now. So yeah, I kind of grew up, you know, in the early 90s. I had an older brother as well who liked soccer, played soccer, everything like that. And, but yeah, it wasn't like really readily available, you know, or really like shown, you know, as it is today. So yeah, it's kind of the same thing. I actually remember my first time, just like you, just kind of stumbling across on a TV one time and being like, what in the world? Because my brother's watching it, and I said, coming to the living room, I was like, what is this? And you know, and then just kind of like sat down. I remember that was like the first time. As a little kid, you know, I was all over the place, just never stopped moving. So it's like, just for me to sit down for longer than, you know, 5 minutes at a time and actually watch something definitely caught my eye. So at a young age, I remember I was probably about 7 years old when I first saw it as well. So yeah, it's definitely, yeah. Definitely something that just kind of catches your eye, something different about it, you know? So
Kyle, I'm 30, buddy. And I've got, I'm the oldest of four, all, you know, three boys and one girl. So I was the one dominating that TV as we were growing up. So I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Man, you guys are lucky.
Yeah, I know you're
That's right. I was the middle child. So I just, you know, was around and yeah, people were paying attention to everyone else, so that was cool.
No one cared. Yeah, no one cared.
Exactly. They were like, we have another kid. So, yeah. That's awesome, man. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, like I said, I saw it and you'd posted about it recently, and I saw it was a really awesome story, and I just think it's kind of cool just to kind of hear how people, kind of how soccer really got, you know, got involved in your life and everything like that, and obviously it's still kind of your life just in a unique way. I think it's awesome. We'll kind of get to that more. Then, you know, you kind of, you grew up and then you ended up going to college at UVA.
UVA legend over here.
That's right. So, yeah, UVA.
Wahoo.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, UVA. We're in Richmond. So we are literally just about an hour, maybe just under an hour away from Charlottesville where UVA is. So
I know
we are very close. So, yeah, so you played there. So were you there for, did you technically play 3 years there?
Yeah, so three seasons, but only 2 years because I took a semester off. To play in the under 20 World Cup. Okay. And so, and then left halfway through my junior year. So only 2 years.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Very cool. And then I know, so, you know, obviously you fell in love with the game at a young age. You kind of grew up, you went to school, got to play, and then were able to eventually take the leap into doing that for a living. So you played professionally. I know you played MLS for a while. And so, I mean, for maybe any younger people that are listening to our show that maybe want to grow up and want to do that. I mean, it was probably very different back then than what it is now too. But I mean, what did that kind of look like for you?
You mean becoming a professional? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny. Everyone's like, you know, what's your advice on becoming a pro? And like, I feel like it makes you sound like a jerk, but the easy answer is like, yeah, it's not going to happen. Right. Just go, because you know 99.9% of you aren't going to be like, just go and lose yourself in something that is so incredibly fun to do. And if like you look up one day and you're really good at it, like keep doing it. And you're probably doing something right. But you know, and I know you don't mean it this way, but like, I mean, it was just, I think it's one issue that we're facing today, which is like kids dropping out of sport at such a young age, because it's like, you know, do this to become a pro. And like, if you don't pick a sport at 8 or 9, you're never going to be any good at it. Yeah. And, you know, like I became a pro because I'd still be playing all day, every day, whether someone paid me to do it or not. And I think what's just wild, and I feel it's so incredibly fortunate and still can't believe it happened, is that like the idea that this thing I loved so much, you know, that anyone would pay me to do it, but that like I got to represent my country doing it, like it's nuts, especially as a kid that grew up without a league in this country. You know, I went to Giant Stadium in 1994 and watched Roberto Baggio, who's one of my heroes, play in the flesh, and like that was kind of cool enough for me. I was like, yeah, I'll play this game. I love it. Like I'm good at it. Like I could probably keep playing it for another, you know, 10 years and go to college or whatever. But, you know, you never dreamed of you would get a chance to go do this, you know, abroad, this like incredible, like international foreign game. So, yeah, I mean, the birth of our professional league as a like beacon at that point of something that was possible was cool. But yeah. Forget the product on the field. Listen, there were some incredible players back then. You know, Donatoni, Valderrama and Thierry Henry and I played with David. Like it was just incredible. But so it's less about like, is the product so much better on the field and all this other stuff? Like, no, it's really the product off the field, right? Like it's like, you know, Messi being there as one of the greatest players of all time, if not the best of all time, being here in this moment, like is incredible. Sure. It's special in so many ways. But like really what's cool is like the stadiums are full. Right. And like, you know, a lot of people are talking about the game. And, you know, MLS is one of many things that they like because people are soccer fans. They're not Premier League fans or MLS fans, like, you know, that. I think that's the cool moment we're in, which is like, you know, we don't have to try to tell you that it's here or that it's a big and important sport. Like, you know, you're going to, you know, it'd be like being in Rush Hour and being like, you know, I'm sure this is gonna be really easy to get where I'm going. It's like, no, you're gonna run into us, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I love the way you put it, where it's just like, you know, I mean, it's true. Like the harsh reality, I think, is like you said, you're probably not going to make it. But I think the great thing about it is just like, you know, in simplest terms, it's like, you know, what did that look like for you? It's like you just went and played. That's just what you did because you like to play it. So
that,
like,
that kind of goes into your whole thing that you have going on with that over under is there not mm-hmm. enough spots for kids to play. And so you're trying to build these areas. Do you think this goes, I know you've got a lot, I believe you got a whole bunch in New York, because in Richmond, we don't have a lot of like just random basketball courts, but you know, are you trying to expand outside of the New York area and over? I mean, I know you're on the West Coast a little bit, but you're taking this thing global. You're taking this thing just as far as it possibly can go.
Yeah, I mean, we're in 13 cities now, and you know, Patrice Evra just came on as a co-founder, and like, you know, obviously what a magical thing to have something, you know, I thought of and created, you know, be interesting enough for someone of his caliber to want to get involved. But the story is even better and more magical in that one of the things that inspired me to build Over Under Initiative and design and patent Golfer was a documentary called Concrete Football. It's about an area north of Paris that has disproportionately created some of the best players we've ever seen. The last French team to win the national to win the World Cup, you know, almost half of that team is not only from like one area or not only from one city, they're from one little area north of that city. And that documentary talked about, you know, Thierry Henry and Mbappe obviously Patrice Evra and Mahrez, like all of the, it's like they're like our Rucker Park of basketball, like that's their version for soccer. And you know, it's historically playing on hardscape is one of the reasons it's the most beautiful game. Like the game is right there on the corner, and there's way more hardscape than there is like available grass to go and do these things, especially when you think of what a blue collar sport, you know, soccer is around the world. And so, you know, it's like, you know, it's scientifically proven that playing on hardscape has developed the best players in the world. You know, Johan Cruyff has a great quote. I trained 3 hours a week at Ajax and played 3 hours a day in the street. Where do you think I learned how to play football? And so, you know, this wild thing is there's 2000 basketball courts in New York City. And I'm the maniac that tracked 30 of them for 2 months and realized, like, you know, they're not being used for their primary purpose. And the biggest mistake we can make is turning them into something else. And yeah, just stole an idea that I've seen in every country but ours, which is every basketball hoop has a soccer goal under it. And you know, spent 3 years battling all the no's to design a way to turn a basketball court into, you know, 4 or 5 different athletic complexes.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think it's awesome. I mean, I've talked to so many different people, you know, just a lot of my friends who, you know, I grew up with either that are maybe like not as much into soccer, or they're interested in soccer, so they're kind of just jumping in because they know I love it. And it's just like, it just boils down to, it's always been an interesting topic for me too, to kind of think about that. I've thought about where it's like, you know, that the game is so much bigger than just a game. It's so much bigger than us. It's so much bigger than this country even. Like, it's all over the world. And it's like, you know, why, one, I think one of the reasons why it is the most popular sport in the world is like, what is it? What do you need to play the game of soccer? You need a ball. Like, that's pretty much it. Like, and you know, I've seen a couple documentaries as well where it's like, you know, you see kids and, you know, whatever country it might be where they can't afford anything, so they're just putting like 2 stones as a goal, and then they're making, you know, a ball to like plastic bags or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. But like, it just brings community together, which I just think is that's the beautiful game. And so I love the fact that, you know, through Street FC and with, you know, with Golfer and everything like that, and Over Under and all of that, just all that together, I just love like what you're doing just to kind of make the game accessible to everyone. Because kind of what I've read about and heard about, listened to, is just that for whatever reason, soccer seems to be like kind of expensive to play at the youth level in this country.
Not kind of.
And so, yeah, which is
it's egregious. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess I don't fully understand, and not that you have to answer this, but I don't fully understand why it is that way. And so like, I just love the fact that you're like, well, I want to do what I can, do my part to make it accessible for the kids that maybe can't afford to play, but they love the game, so they can go to their basketball court, you know, near them and pull up these goals out of the ground. They can play, and then, you know, it gives them an outlet to be able to play the best game of the world, and to be, maybe have, you know, create a future of some sort. Who knows? Or just have fun with their friends. Like,
Kyle, was it expensive for you when you started out?
Yeah, thanks, man. No. I mean, first off, I you know, like Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers, I logged the 10,000 hours in unstructured play. I mean, I played a lot for free. That's how I learned how to play. I played a lot with Caribbeans and Hispanics on hardscape and indoors. One of my really close friends growing up, Edson Buttle, his dad had a bunch of Jamaican friends that would play in a gym in Mount Vernon. And like, you know, I rarely had to play to get soccer, you know, my soccer fix. And, you know, the Olympic development program and certain structures that used to exist back then, you know, the there was cost, but like pay to play is not the enemy. It's been around forever. You've always had to pay to play. It's just now, like, how much and who's paying and for what, and like, you know, how much. I mean, it's eye-watering, it's wild. And who, like, only the people that are lucky enough to come from backgrounds that can afford it, and like, for what, like a lot of times for something you can get for free that's a lot better than what you're paying for. And so, you know, I'm not anti structure and coaches and teams and tournaments and all that stuff, like, not at all. It's just we've really, you know, created such market confusion where these poor parents, like, they just don't know any better, and any parent will do whatever they can to give their kid an opportunity. And the problem is, like, the kids with unlimited potential, not, you know, from a playing standpoint, but more so from a character and a quality of person at the standpoint, like, there's this potential that doesn't get unlocked because sport's just not in the lives of kids that, you know, historically, whether it's, you know, basketball in our country or soccer abroad, like, you know, the sports that have historically been, you know, available and accessible, like, basketball is expensive now. And so, yeah, it's really just a $1 billion youth industry that, we're just up against, you know, kids being worried about, success at way too young an age, and, like, you know, winning and succeeding. Yeah, these aren't words you ever hear around some of the greatest soccer countries in the planet at a young age.
When do you think that changed? Because when I was playing, I'm 30, right? So when I was playing in, like, even in high school, it wasn't like an expensive thing. It was, like, hard to find coaches at this time. And then it was like, I got out of high school. I left, you know, Richmond for 2 years. I came back, and then all of a sudden it's every soccer field that we have, which is, we got a lot of fields, what's the word that I'm looking for? They got, like, multi-purpose fields. Mm-hmm. We got big, yeah, you know, massive complexes of soccer fields that they just created as I was gone, came back, and they're packed every weekend. When do you think this, because it's one of the big things that I find, it was, you know, people talking about now, I've got, you know, obviously to a weird age where all my friends have kids, which is a weird thing, but they're all getting their kids into soccer, and so how expensive it was. And I was like, back in the day, it was just socks, you know, shin pads, cleats, and a ball. We were good to go, and that was it. So when do you think this really started taking over?
I mean, I think, you know, the moment that every parent and child had a computer in their hand, and just had all sorts of wild marketing and targeting that just, and listen, go back to Mad Men, like, you know, advertising, you know, selling you a happier life is not a new thing. Yeah. It's just having an ability to target, you know, children and, you know, plant seeds and convince, like, a whole generation that, you know, you're not a good parent unless your kid goes to a great school, or you're not a good parent unless your kid is on that team, and your kid's not going to be on that team unless you're willing to get them a private trainer. Like, all of this stuff just became, I think, is compounded from the moment that your kid was sitting there staring at that, and you as a parent were too, as opposed to, like, what it was like when I was a kid, which was, I'd be gone, you know, and I'm talking at, like, 9 years old, would be gone for the whole day. Like, right. I'd come back after, like, finding money in the couch and riding our bikes, like, to CVS, yep, and buying, like, an Aerobie and just, like, playing with it until it got stuck in a tree. Oh, like, this just world of kids just feeling a pressure to succeed and fit in and be a part of things, but then running into so much friction between like that desire and the ability to do it is just, yeah, I think it's just creating a marketplace where it's easy to prey on parents to try and buy their kids out of that funk.
Yeah. Kids have iPads now. It's wild, man. It's absolutely wild. So I could not agree more with that. So you've got your over under initiative to start growing the game here in the States. Do you think that is really, you brought it up a minute ago, that it's not just Messi coming into the league, it's more people actually being in the stadiums and being involved in the game. Is that, when you left NBC, was that really the thought forward of how can we grow it here in the States, was by this over-under initiative, or was it a bit more than that?
Yeah. I mean, it was at that point I had started over-under, invented and patented Golfer, started Street FC, and then Football Cafe, the last company, hopefully last company. I got to slow down. I left because I saw the impact I could have on the game. And my interest in taking all my years of experience, the relationships I have, the understanding I have, and these instruments that I have, like I saw that the impact I could make on the game was much greater by being out here and doing it, as opposed to being on the TV and talking about it. And so, for myriad reasons, it was time to move on to another challenge. And I ran for U.S. Soccer president 5 years ago, and losing that election was kind of the best thing that ever happened to me. That was the moment everything shifted for me. And I saw, like, it's impossible to make an impact from the top. You got to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to move the game a millimeter. And, the culture of the game, the hardest part to understand and to nurture and to design for is actually like where I understand what I'm capable of the most. And it's where hundreds of thousands of dollars move the game a lot, right? And that, so I guess, like, I just saw with all the amazing things that were going to be force multipliers, the 2026 World Cup and, the growth of the game and Ted Lasso and like all this stuff that was just growing something I've loved forever. I just looked across the landscape and I didn't see any sophisticated and intelligent instruments that made it easier to love and play the game of soccer. So that was just, my accidental studio fun was I just, being a kid from the 90s and growing up in a country that didn't have a league and now has one of the best players in the, like, ever playing in it. Like, I've just seen things no one else has seen and I've been paying attention. And so that now I just have the ability to leverage my network, my understanding of the game, and my passion to change the trajectory of what this game means to people in this country. And whether I just do it for a city or a region, like, there are many people doing incredible things out there that are a spoke in a wheel, just like I am, doing what they can to move this game forward.
Kyle, you said that you felt like you could do more to expand the game outside of the NBC studio. I want you to know, man, that for a generation of people my age, Barclays was, you, the two Robbies, Rebecca. That is such a, I don't know if you run into like dudes from in between like 25 and 35, mm-hmm. but that my fiance, I've been with, we just got engaged. We've been together for 9-10 years now. She can't name a soccer player outside of Messi and Ronaldo. She knows 100% who you, the two Robbies and Rebecca are, and Tim Howard, Danny, which is hilarious, man. So it's interesting that you bring that up, that was a way that you could kind of expand the game more. Since you were at NBC, I need a quick, and then I'll get back to everything else quick. Who do you think's winning the, you still pay attention to the Premier League, right? I see you're at your football cafe. You had Wolves United on. Who do you think, what's your top four this year?
I mean, our Arsenal are winning. That's all. That's the only important thing. And this was the big breaking news that happened. I never wanted to say who I supported. As the only American on the coverage, I thought that might be a pretty dangerous thing to invite. Sure. And my son Major has become a huge fan of soccer, and his uncle Lee Dixon, Lee, obviously was trying to make a case, but he didn't have to, because Arsenal's the team that I've loved ever since, going back to Highbury and the teams of George Graham and Lee and those guys. But the Invincibles just solidified. That was one of the most incredible things to watch and change the way I think and feel about the game. So I've been an Arsenal fan for a long time, but now it's official and it's great. Now that I'm not doing NBC anymore, I can be incredibly
bad. How awesome is that your son's getting into it?
No, it's the best. I mean, I think I've like overcompensated in the other direction of like not not having it around, not putting it on, not playing, you know, it's like just, I was just so worried. I you know, it's like I would disrupt it, sure. You know, it's like trying to sneak up on a butterfly. So like, he loves it exactly how I did. He's fanatical about
that's,
it.
That's awesome, man. The, you know, back to everything that you have, you've got going on, you know, I know you said that you still pay attention, which is awesome. We talked to Eddie Lewis about a month or so ago. He said that you guys might have something in store, a little bit of Toga football, a little bit over under going on. Anything you could share? We still in the wrap. I mean,
nothing we could share yet, but you know, it's cool. Like Eddie, you know, we were teammates briefly with the U.S. national team, and you know, we've been friends and we haven't seen each other a lot, but you know, Eddie was kind of my first and only, like, former player mentor. You know, like he's just an incredible example of like what we did on the field and who we are. Like, you know, that could be applied to so many different things. And like, yeah, what an incredible entrepreneur and visionary and person he is. So it's been not only cool to just, you know, call him and ask for advice as a budding entrepreneur, but the fact that, you know, our things can overlap and combine in some ways is, you know, it's cool because it's not a pressure we feel. It's just like, yeah. It's kind of like when you see, you know, two artists, you know, it's like when Neil Young, like, joined Crosby, Stills, and Nash, it's like just cool to do stuff together.
Yeah. The, you know, he was a smart guy. I mean, that was like what I took away from my conversation with that guy. Just absolutely. Very, very smart guy. Yep. That Toka social thing he's got over in the UK would absolutely kill here. I mean, you could rake in money over here for
incredible.
That, man.
Incredible. Cool.
Need to get that going. You paying attention to this Women's World Cup? Sucks that it's on at 4 a.m. I got to be honest with you, man. I mean, that is a killer for me, but it's, I get up, watch the highlights, but it's 4 a.m. is rough. 5:30, I'm good. But four. P's and P's all those West Coast people that got to wake up super early.
I mean, obviously I'm devastated that the U.S. are out. And also just like disgusted by like the Schadenfreude and like, you know, just the like vitriol and awful people out there that want to celebrate
Kyle,
their failure.
Kyle, that's actually one of my questions.
It's just disgusting. Yeah. It's like, dude, let's rewind and let me see what you were doing when they won in 99. Yeah. Like you losers. I mean, it's just like, I mean, what type of person celebrates in the failure of one of the world's best teams, especially when it's your team. So like, yeah, have no time for those people.
Kyle,
sure.
I've never, again, man, I keep saying this, I'm 30. My entire life, it's the men's national team has been competitive, but the women's national team has been like the team. Yeah. I have never in my whole Olympics, World Cup, no matter what it is, I've never in my whole life seen anybody from the States celebrate a loss the way that, why is that? Like, is it because this team is just so polarizing? But a lot of those players were gone.
I mean, honestly, I don't want to make it political, but it's a lot of people that do not have an open mind and a compassionate soul, and do not like having to change old, antiquated paradigms that should not exist anymore, and you know, and they're the type of people that are not about growth. They're about being right and being in echo chambers. And this really celebrating their loss is like some twisted logic of them thinking whatever political view they hold is right based on them not deserving equal pay or not believing in same-sex marriage or women's rights. Like, you know, it's impossible not to trace it to like being that type of person, because I mean, listen, there are a lot of athletes I don't like. There's a lot of athletes on teams I don't like. But what I think about them personally has nothing to do with what I want our team to do, which is win. I could never in my life be like, well, I don't like how this guy or girl holds themselves or what they believe in. So now that the team lost, like, let me jump on Twitter and like, it's like, who are you?
For real. Right. For real. Kyle, I'm happy you brought that up, because that was truly one of I was dumbfounded at what was going on when they lost, because I've never seen that in my entire life. Yeah. Politics, I don't feel like should be involved in sport. It should just be the sport. Enjoy your time. I mean, at the end of the day, it's just, you know, it's a kid's game, and very lucky to be able to play that kid's game, but people take that a bit too far. I understand getting mad and getting passionate about something, but to celebrating your own country getting kicked out, it was mind-blown to me. On the actual game, man, because again, we could talk about that, and you're right, it would go straight into politics, and we don't need to do that.
Yep.
On the actual game, why do you think that we took this unfortunate loss? Was it, we got a bunch of like young up-and-comers mixed in with older that maybe it's about time that they shouldn't have been there? Do you think it was a mix of that, or do you think and it plays in with what you have going on, I'm trying to build it here. Do you think the rest of the world's caught up to us in the women's game?
I mean, it's no one thing. It's the combination of two things. It's this team, which is very talented, being in transition and you know, it's very difficult. The U.S. men's team is very similar, right? Like the 2002 men's World Cup team is the high watermark on that side. Like it was, you could see like when a lot of that group and the nucleus of that was gone, and also the incredible talent of today, and that the pool is bigger, right? So the intimacy might not be as established, but like this was not because the U.S. is not one of the best teams in the world. They are. But what is absolutely real is the rest of the world, I mean, forget is catching up, has caught up. And this doesn't surprise any of us that have been paying attention in the background and banging the drum. Yeah. Like Title IX is the single factor that our women's national team is the Brazil of women's soccer, right? That they're a world powerhouse because a piece of legislation created opportunities for incredible women's soccer players that were at the end of their road, and Title IX extended that road and allowed you know, competitive professional level women's players to continue playing at a competitive professional level, right? That UNC team that Mia Hamm and everyone was on, and then what Anson did from then forward, like, had something to do with great coaching, had something to do with a brand, but had a lot to do with Title IX. And like every other country has their version of Title IX, like, and better, honestly. And that, like, it's not just checking a box. It's a lot of countries strategically focusing on improving their women's team. And I think when you look at the ratings and you see sellout stadiums, what is very clear, which should shut everyone up that had any sort of debate on, you know, they don't get as many people watching their games and all this sort of stuff. It's like, well, hold on a second. Like when you invest in it, you see what happens. Yeah. Like, you know, they sell out stadiums and they get big ratings. Sure. And like, look, the U.S. women are out, and yeah, they're still good ratings. I mean, of course, they're not what it would be if the U.S. women are in, but and this might sound like spin, but like, you know, I'm always looking for the upside. My dad has this great saying, if you can't fix it, feature it. So, all right, the U.S. women are out earlier than they've ever been in the past. But this is going to be interesting because I already know the thing people are expecting happens isn't going to happen. It's not like everyone's going to tune this out and not watch the Women's World Cup. And so I think it'll be good for brands and investors and you know, young players to see, like, the U.S. women are not the only thing propping up the global game of soccer. There are some incredible teams with remarkable players left, and people are going to be watching this thing even when it's at 4 a.m.
You absolutely ain't kidding, man. It is, you know, to finish out on that whole thing, I think I'll speak for all of it. It's so weird watching United States citizens cheer on the United States team losing. It's just, that was such a wild thing for me, man. In terms of, you know, back home now, you know, obviously you brought it up a couple times, but Messi in the MLS, how massive is this, man? I mean, we can't go through this episode without talking about it. How big is this guy coming here? And is David Beckham the greatest of all time for the MLS? Because he's done this twice now.
There's an interesting argument that it wasn't mine, someone raised, and it got me thinking, is that like there's data behind it. It's irrefutable that the impact, measurable impact, is already much greater with Messi than it was with David Beckham. I mean, you know, their Instagram handle went from like 700,000 to 8 million like in less than a week. But you have to realize, like, it's only at that level because of people like Thierry Henry and Beckham that came in. So like, you know, when Beckham came along, at the time he came along, was the biggest thing that ever happened to soccer in this country. And like, this sounds like a tangential and weird connection I'm trying to make, but like, if he didn't, then there is no Messi, because there's no way Messi goes to Miami. First off, there's no way there's a Miami team if David Beckham doesn't come to the like, Galaxy. There's also no way Messi comes if that's not David Beckham as the owner. I mean, I know there's no way. And so, like, you know, it's cool that these are connected, where we're not sitting here being like, did David Beckham have the, like, it's an interesting question. But for me, I think you'd argue David Beckham has had the largest impact on soccer in this country, because at the time as a player, like, it was enormous. And I was there front row. Like, I was in practice the first day when we went from 8 people at practice from the press to the whole field surrounded with helicopters over it. So it was insane. And like, this is a continuation of that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I think, I definitely agree with that. I think it's a solid viewpoint, for sure. But yeah, and I think, I mean, it's just done nothing but positive things for the MLS and just for this country, for the game growing, and that. So yeah, I think you're right. I love the connection between, like, yeah, if David Beckham hadn't have come and made the deal that he made, you know, to like be able to, you know, hey, like, I'm gonna be able to purchase, to buy into MLS to start a franchise at this certain rate, you know, kind of thing. And it's like, it just all just worked out. Like, it's all strategic, but it just was genius. So I mean, I love it. I love it. And you know, and I just think that's just one very just awesome contributing factor just to the game continuing to grow. And I think the next thing that I would love to hit kind of with that as well is, we've mentioned Street FC a little bit. It's another one of your companies. You know, obviously, so we kind of hit over under, but Street FC. So what is, for maybe people that don't know it, listen to us. So, you know, what is kind of your, it's just another way, I think, another outlet to kind of grow the game in the country and make it accessible. But what was your vision behind that?
Yeah, so Street FC is a company I founded with the Foursquare founder, Dennis Crowley. And our ambition was to build the largest football club on the planet through activating Blacktop with street soccer. And you know, it's kind of like a soul cycle of pickup soccer. It's an easy way to understand it. I kind of hate that analogy, but in reality, like, the same way those incredible two women as entrepreneurs saw something that had been around for a long time that just needed to be branded and delivered in a different way. Like, it got people back in a room riding on a bike after it being around, you know, for decades before that, and made them a part of something. And so, yeah, Street FC is my effort to bring back not only the most authentic and inclusive way of playing, which is pickup, but, you know, obviously, like I said before, one of the best ways and most gender neutral, age neutral, safe and competitive and creative way to play the game. You know, 5v5 winner stays is the most competitive I've ever been in my life. And playing on concrete is one of the best ways to develop a player and continue playing. And so all it needed was the same way he used Foursquare to make cities easier to use. We created technology that makes concrete easier to play soccer on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I can't tell you how many times that I have looked, I'm not just saying this to say it, but I've looked on the website, on the Street FC website, and I have the app on my phone, that I've looked at it and been like, man, like, maybe I should reach out and try to, like, you know, be the person that brings it to Richmond or whatever. It starts it here, because I'm like, man, it'd be so much fun to stinking do. So I love it. Like,
I mean, this is it right now. Like, breaking news, like, Street FC coming to Richmond, brought to you by United States of Soccer.
I love it. Because, yeah, I mean, I do. I love the idea behind it. I think it's awesome. You know, I mean, I want to play more, and I want to get more people into it. So, I mean, I'm definitely looking at it for sure.
Kyle, this is all this is to grow the game. Do you think promotion relegation grows this game in the States, or do you think that's just, I don't think the MLS will ever have it because you got the buy-in of the team and everything, but do you think promotion relegation, maybe for like USL and everything, do you think this is something that can impact and grow the game here? Or do you think it's just the European and outside of the US have their model, we have ours?
Mm-hmm. I think promotion relegation improves the game in this country, no doubt. I've studied it really hard. I believe in it deeply. But I'm not using that buzzword without understanding it. I'm not using that buzzword to rile up a rabid crowd of people. I'm using it because it's the greatest sporting the greatest sporting meritocracy on the planet, and I think an incredibly entertaining format that would improve the game in this country for many reasons. Now, that being said, it's not as simple as just installing it. It's not as simple as just flipping a switch and saying we want it tomorrow. And so, you know, I wish that this wasn't such a third rail conversation, and I blame both like sides for it. It's like politics. It's just like groups not listening to the other, and also not even having a cogent argument or plan for anything. And so, I hope it comes, and I think eventually it will, because I think one of the reasons MLS has to change its rules every year is because, as great as that single entity system was, and it was the right design, it was the right way to go about this. And if they didn't, I don't think the league would be where it is. And I don't think there would have even been a league for me to play in. You know, I think we've hit a diminishing returns moment where the system has to be changed every year because the market wants something different.
Yeah, it's a massive topic, and it for some reason it causes massive divide, which I don't think it should. I think it should just be an open conversation about it. I don't think.
Yeah, that's just honestly, that's just because there's idiots that are looking for attention that are the loudest voices on both sides of this thing.
You seem to find more of these idiots nowadays, man. I don't know what happened here, but we see.
You don't have to look. You just have to look.
Solid.
You ain't kidding. Go ahead, Brian.
Solid. Yeah. No, that's very true. But yeah, I mean, and we're looking. You know, we've talked about it on our show a little bit too. But we've talked about like USL. Kind of looking to implement promotion or relegation with that, and I would love to see it too, because I totally agree. Like I think it would do nothing but improve the game. But and I do get it. I do get that it's not as easy as flipping the switch, especially with MLS. Like I get it. It's not as easy as flipping the switch to say, all right, we're gonna do this now. So I know there's a lot of like red tape involved and stuff, but I don't know. I just think it just gives you so much more to play for in my mind too. So just adds a whole other element to it. But yeah, I mean that's awesome. I mean that's good insight. And then I know. Kind of want to move on to the next thing here is kind of your latest, I guess, venture is, you know, where you're sitting right now, Football Cafe. I mean, do you mind just kind of diving into that a bit?
Yeah. Football Cafe was originally started by a good friend of mine, Diego Moscasoni, and it was started, you know, 200 yards from where I'm sitting right now in Chinatown. And originally it was just a place for, you know, players and lovers of the game to congregate after playing or watching the game to grab a coffee or smoothie and see some incredible, you know, designs around for kits and so on and so forth. And it's just amazing that years after they closed their doors, we're able to bring it back in this big way. And at this point, you know, the intention is to build a dedicated soccer consumer brand, the first of its kind, that's about an in real life experience that gets people that identify as soccer fans, people around the culture of the game, together in a place to enjoy and celebrate that, occasionally watch games, occasionally talk about it, but more often just let the electricity of soccer lead to all the other things that this international game brings: food, art, fashion, music. And so, yeah, it's exciting to bring it back, and we'll be officially opening the doors in a month or so. And, you know, the aim is, as the game becomes more exciting, more interesting to a larger audience here and easier to watch, we've noticed it's become harder to get around others to do it. Wow. And, you know, this isn't against the places that celebrate one team, but, you know, it's just naturally a cathedral of one team is going to alienate the people that love soccer that are not fans of that team, let alone people that are just finding this game and falling in love with this game and want to find an inclusive and enjoyable way to plug into it. So yeah, for the great saying that Diego came up with is, you know, low level to pro level. We just exist to be an experiential brand that serves the culture of the game. And hopefully there will never be a city where you come into where you wonder, like, where can we go to watch the game or be around soccer fans?
Yeah, right. No, that's a solid point, because I think, you know, so I think there's plenty of cities that have, you know, whether it's a bar or something like that just has, you know, it's kind of catered to one team. So, you know, maybe they'll open.
Which is great.
Oh, yeah. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. And that's, people can go to that and do that. But I think it's a cool thing to have, to, you know, find somewhere to be able to have something to go to where it's like, you know, you're able to see more than just one team's game. You're able to see, you know, multiple teams. Maybe because we talk to, you know, our people all the time about like people that are just getting involved and watching the Premier League, and like, you know, they're looking to pick a team where it's like, man, like, don't have to just gravitate to a big, you know, like a bigger name team. Like you can, like watch, like do you like watch the teams and see who you like, who you kind of relate to. And like, it's cool to have a place like that, like what you're doing, the Football Cafe, where you can just go just unbiased and like, you know, maybe you link arms with, and you know, you relate to some other fans that are there of, you know, whatever team it might be. And you fall in love with that, because of a story they had. Like, I love that idea. So I think that's just, I think it's solid. So I love it. I'm looking forward to it. I follow it on Instagram for sure. I've been following all your stuff, and I'm super pumped to see what comes of it. And we'll have to make a United States of Soccer boys have to make a trip up to Football Cafe once it opens up.
Yeah,
we've been talking with Kyle Martino here. He's got Street FC, the Over Under Project, Football Cafe, among other things. One more question before I let you. Two more questions. Yep. Best pizza in New York. Where's it at?
Oh man. It's a tie between Feeney Pizza, which is a great friend of mine who I went to UVA with, who actually was on the lawn a lot smarter than me. And he's now started his second location at Barclay Center. The other's on Bedford Ave in Williamsburg. The other is Lindustry, my boy Massimo, who's actually right around the corner from Feeney. Those are the two spots.
You heard it.
If you're here, you got to go to those.
You heard it here first from Kyle. Kyle, last thing before I let you go, man. When you were on NBC, what the hell was in your hair the whole time? That thing didn't move, brother. That thing didn't move. It sat. Was that just stylist, or was that just natural, God's gift?
Listen, there are some secrets that are always going to stay secrets.
Everybody, that's Kyle Martino. Hey, man, thank you so much for coming on, dude. You've been
for
the best.
Real.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks a ton, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was episode 3 of our Beyond the Pitch series. Big shout out to Kyle Martino for coming on. He was absolutely awesome. Seriously, big appreciation from myself, Brian, and Alex for him taking the time. Man's obviously busy. He took a little bit of time, about 50 minutes out of his day, to come hang out with us. Big shout out to him. We appreciate him. Go give Kyle a follow on Instagram. He is constantly plugging all the stuff that he is into. Follow along with all that. Hopefully soon we see that Eddie Lewis, Kyle Martino collab, maybe a couple years away from that. But these two guys, man, smart guys, doing a lot of good things to grow the game off of the field. And just such a good dude. Seriously, such a good dude when we're sitting there talking to him. So big appreciation to Kyle for coming on. And everybody, after you're done going to follow Kyle, go follow my man Brian Mitchell on Twitter and Instagram. This guy was absolutely buzzing to have Kyle on. So was I, so was Alex. But this is, Kyle Martino was one of those guys for Brian that Brian just was truly buzzing. I know if you listen to our Premier League Week 1 review show, you'll have heard me say that Brian, as soon as I left the house, I knew Brian was bouncing off the walls. I know Brian was absolutely buzzing to have this guy on. Shout out to Brian. He's the one that made this possible. He was bugging. And shout out to Kyle for taking the time, man. So again, if you guys enjoy stuff like this, if you enjoy these kind of conversations, give our show a follow at US of Soccer Show on Twitter and Instagram. Find us on all your podcasting platforms. Leave us a review. That would be greatly appreciated to us. If it's shit, tell us. If it's good, hit that 5 stars and keep it moving. We appreciate every single one of you guys for listening and tuning in. Get involved in the show, in the socials with us. It's a good time over there. We're trying to build this community. Same as Kyle, same as Eddie, same as everybody else that is just trying to grow the game here in the States. It's what we're trying to do as well. Come hang out with us. We'll see you guys next week.